Today is October 20th, 2015. This is episode number 329 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a whistling, wistful whisperer. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I have a confession to make.
Mm-hmm.
I need to learn how to read a calendar.
Because
today's the 21st, not the 20th.
Oh, LOL at us.
Yeah, but hey, at least I got the episode number right, so there's that.
Yeah, we could start over.
Nah. You're so funny.
Nah, that doesn't, yeah. That doesn't seem like it's...
No. I mean, what? Why should we mess up a perfectly good introduction with the right date?
Right. David Schaefer writes in to acm@macobserver.com. He says, Brian is wrong about cell phone cameras replacing DSLRs. There will always be a place for a full-size sensor, changeable lenses, changeable lens cameras for the advanced amateur and pro photographer that the cell phone will never be able to replace. It's true, and I never actually meant to say, or I agree with him, I never meant to say that DSLRs would be gone, just that they're supplanted. I mean, DSLRs are going to be as present and relevant to the photography world in, I don't know, what, 10 or 15 years at the most, 5, 10 years maybe, as vinyl is in the music business today. There's plenty of vinyl out there.
There is plenty of vinyl out there. There's people that get why they want vinyl and have really good reasons for it. You can definitely get really good audio quality off vinyl.
You absolutely can. It's a different... vinyl offers a different listening experience one way or the other.
Right. Yeah. And DSLRs, yeah, I agree. There's definitely going to be a place for the DSLR. I think the people that need them will... fall into a couple groups. The people that have the real need for what a DSLR format is at that point, and the people that just really want the DSLR.
Yeah, you know, the question is, will SLR still be around? And I'm actually thinking more from the standpoint of film. Though I guess if the big boys all stopped making film, that there would then be a market for a small niche company to make.
I think there's already niche companies that are making films.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And yeah, so I think SLRs will be around because there will be the people that want that feel of film, the texture,
yeah,
the grain.
I love film.
And I love film, and I totally get that grain that I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the imperfection in the film. And in the developing process.
I always loved the colors you would get from Kodachrome slides.
Oh, yes. Oh, man. The colors were so awesome. They almost seemed fake, even though they weren't.
Yeah, exactly. They see. Yeah. I. That is very, very well expressed. But I don't think, like, Kodak doesn't make Kodachrome anymore, do they? Didn't they stop?
No. Yeah, they totally stopped.
I mean, anyway, the point is,
Simon can't get his film anymore. Doesn't matter if his mom takes his camera away now.
That's an excellent point. That's funny. People still use Kodak Brownies too.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that certainly is a device that has no relevance to modern technology whatsoever.
How about Polaroid?
And Polaroid. I mean,
there's a company making Polaroid film again.
Oh, interesting.
And, yeah,
and how many photo? What is it? I just saw this quote the last couple of days ago, and again, because we are professionals,
mm-hmm,
and always prepare by not doing any research. I don't actually remember who said it, but something along the lines of, we take these amazing photographs with our iPhones, and then we share them in ways that make them look like 30, 40 year old technology.
Yeah.
You know, we actually make them look inferior because there's, you know, sort of that warm spot in our hearts for those old kinds of formats. A Polaroid picture is actually a terrible photograph.
Oh, yeah. But I know that there's a warm place in my heart for Polaroids.
Yeah.
Because they were instant. And by instant, I mean you would take the photo, and the Polaroid camera my parents had, you had to crank the handle to get the square out, mm-hmm. and then you peel the sheet off. But I don't remember. Did you peel it off right away? Do you have to wait several minutes before peeling it off?
You had to wait different amounts of times because it was processing.
Right, right. So these instant photos, it was like a 10-minute process for an instant photo.
Yeah.
But at the time, that was pretty darn close to instant.
Yeah, well, actually, I think some of the early ones, weren't they like 30 minutes?
Probably. And now my assumption is if you're someone that's out buying Polaroid-compatible film today and taking photographs with a Polaroid camera, you get your shot out of the camera, and then one of the first things you do is lay it on a flatbed scanner and scan it to get it in your computer. I mean, Polaroids are, just by the nature of that technology, a transient medium.
Or, you know, if you don't have a scanner, you could just take a photograph with your iPhone.
yes, you could. So, but the point is that DSLRs, yes, they will still have a place, and iPhones and other smartphone cameras aren't going to make them go away, but they will become less mainstream than they are today.
They just will becoming more and more niche. They may even become more and more specialized. I mean, you know, there's something to be said for that big glass, which is why I was so interested in seeing this device that company Light was making, which is what sparked this conversation in the first place,
mm-hmm.
is they're using an array of small glass to achieve what they say is better quality than the big glass. Now, we don't know that that's actually true yet.
That's right. But we haven't seen this camera in action. We have seen some images on their website that they say are from a prototype of this camera.
Right. And they, that may or may not be true. It probably is true, but it may or may not be true. We don't know. But it, you know, at some point, you know, so it's interesting. We still struggle, by we, I mean the industries that are involved here. Shooting a film with film, a movie with film, mm-hmm. is expensive. It's a lot of expensive, and it's also a orders of magnitude more of a hassle than just shooting digital. But there's something about images captured to film that we find more aesthetically pleasing, and I don't think it's just change resistance.
No, it's we are so familiar with the film grain. Well, and I think that's what a lot of it is. It's film grain. Thing.
But
and well, to a degree, but in our minds, that grain texture that you have in a film is part of what makes the film a film. And when you take that away, even though the image looks more natural, it feels unnatural.
It's not just the grain; it's the it's also the flatness, right? There's a certain quality to digital that feels really cheap to me. I don't know. I don't have the vocabulary.
Well, I think this is why a lot of the film editing apps, like the especially the high end professional apps, they have filters that you apply to your video that you've created, your digital video, to make it appear as if it was shot on film.
And we still haven't gotten that right. And it's funny because that was actually my original point here, is that we still haven't gotten that right. It's better. It's closer mm-hmm. all the time. But, you know, there's definitely still film producers, film directors who prefer to actually just shoot film in the first place. There's going to be people that prefer DSLRs. I mean, there actually will come a day where, you know, a combination of software and hardware and an array of lenses and who knows what else can actually take a better image than any kind of, you know, big glass. That day will come. But even when that day comes, there's going to be plenty of people who want to do it the quote unquote right way or the old way or what, you know, however it is they look at it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the great thing is we will have the technology so that they can continue to shoot the way they wanted to. And the interesting thing is people aren't talking about the end of the SLR. They're talking about the end of the DSLR. The SLR, except for the fact that we brought it up. Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can still get SLR cameras, but...
but at this point, unless you have a very special need or desire, why would you buy an SLR? And I think in the future, it'll be the same for DSLR, unless you have that special need or want. Why otherwise would you buy a DSLR? Like,
you know, as of right now, there's still a lot of depth of field stuff you just can't do with little glass, and you can't do it with filters. I don't care what, you know, Samsung or Nokia or whomever will tell you otherwise, or an app maker will tell you otherwise. There's depth of field stuff that is not doable with a smartphone.
I agree.
But even that could change.
Well, look at where we are today with the iPhone 6S. We mm-hmm. have a 12 megapixel camera with these crazy sensitive sensors in them, and really nice glass for the lenses. And
small glass,
but still really nice glass. And then look at where we were. Was it 7 years ago for the original iPhone?
Yeah.
What was that? That was like a 1.2 megapixel camera.
The original iPhone have a camera?
Yeah.
The first one did?
Yeah.
That was the second one that did.
Well, hold on. Let's see what Mac Tracker says.
We are professionals.
We are. Hold on. Mac Tracker. Let's bring that bad boy up. It's somewhere on my screen. I know it. Oh, there it is. This screen is so big. Okay. Original iPhone. Oh no, it was 2 megapixels for the camera. So it did not have a front facing camera though.
You definitely did not have a front facing camera.
Right. But it had a 2 megapixel camera. I was pretty sure it had a camera.
Okay.
I was pretty sure I had taken photos that just.
Yeah. Now that you say it that way. Yeah. I remember doing the same thing. Brad Hurley. Faithful writer says,
"Hi, Brad.
Does it seem?" He said, "Is it just me, or does it seem like Apple could be doing a much better job in the PR department? I just feel like they could be giving more attention to educating the public. They are great at showcasing the product line, but they're quite weak in the how and the why department. Why should I feel the need for a new watch? Or I already have cable, DirecTV, etc. What does it even mean to have Apple TV?" How does it work? Do I subscribe to something? Do I just buy it in public? Or iPhones? They're all fine and good, but $1,000? I can see why a lot of folks might resent that. Brad, have you just met Apple? I mean, it's an interesting question. The Apple's market, you know, Apple stopped marketing like that because that's what everybody else does. And Apple stopped that when Steve Jobs came back in 1997. You know, they stopped advertising HALs. They stopped advertising specs.
The last commercial that I can clearly remember where Apple talked about specs was the blue and white G3 commercial where they had the computer set up and then tanks around it because...
That's the commercial they didn't show. That was an unreleased commercial that got leaked.
That was an unreleased commercial? Wow. Okay, well, I saw it. But that's the last one I recall.
Right. Am I thinking of the same one you're thinking of?
Yeah, where they talk about it being a classified as a weapon by the U.S. government. And
yeah, I'm pretty sure that was a commercial that like most of us Mac fans were like all keen on Apple releasing. But you know, here's the interesting thing. Apple has apparently done fairly well without doing that sort of thing.
Well, Apple knows how to go after the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember the Christmas iPhone commercial from last year? Where,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, the one with the teenage boy. Yeah, he seems all distant from the family, and he's just got his face in his phone. And then they do the tearjerker at the end, where he shows the video he'd been making all weekend of the family.
Yeah,
and you see that, and specs don't matter, and it doesn't matter what size screen you have. It doesn't even matter what model iPhone it is. All you really need to know out of that is that this was the tool that brought the family together.
Right. Yeah, Apple doesn't tend to show us how to do things. It doesn't even necessarily show us what we can do with them. It actually tends to show people doing things with them.
Yes. There's an Apple Watch commercial that I recently saw, which for me is something because I typically don't watch television where there would be commercials. And it was a woman dancing and there's this guy that's there. He's kind of dancing with her. And she gets a message on her Apple Watch, and she looks at it, and it's the babysitter showing that her baby is asleep. And she doesn't miss a step. She keeps dancing around, and then grabs the guy's tie and pulls him out of the camera. And that's the whole commercial.
Yeah, that one's called Dating or Date.
Oh, that's so not what I was going to call it. I was thinking.
Let's just leave it.
All right. You sure you don't want me to say?
Because I think I kind of like not knowing. All right. Not actually defining this at the moment. It's funny. I don't like that commercial. You know why I don't like that commercial?
Why?
It's too abstract. They're so obviously in a studio, and it's not like they're trying to not pretend that they're in a studio, but it's weirdly abstract to me. I found the abstractness distracting.
Well, all the commercials in that run have that same feel.
There's the woman on the
bicycle.
Yeah. Why is she on the bicycle in the big studio? That doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I do like the message of the commercial for sure, but I am distracted by the artificialness of the setting. And I'm sure that was deliberate. I'm sure.
Oh yeah, of course it's deliberate.
Yeah, that's what they were going for. I mean, it would have been to me. It would have been better if it had been the now, sort of standard operating procedure white room. The white background that these people were doing these things in front of, that would have made more sense to me than the sort of gray giant studio with no horizon. I don't know. I truly found it distracting.
Interesting. It did not bother me at all.
I almost wrote about it and decided not to.
Oh, that's good, because then the discussion on the show would have been, so Brian, you wrote this article and you're wrong. but I know it's all about how each of us individually perceive the messages, and that was something that didn't sit well with you. It was something that didn't bother me at all.
Right. So, getting back to Brad's point, my take on this question is that what Brad is asking is, wouldn't Apple do better if it was doing something entirely different from what it's doing? And it's possible that's the case, but it is kind of hard to come up with a scenario in which Apple is doing even better.
Sure. And then to address the Apple TV part specifically, I think we will be seeing different Apple TV commercials come next week after we can order an Apple TV.
Yeah, maybe, but still not the kind that Brad's asking for.
I think you're right.
So anyway, that's my take. We want to hear from you at acm@macobserver.com. Now, here's what one of the many reasons why I love doing this show with you, Jeff. We didn't plan any of that.
No, we didn't. I had no idea you were going to bring up any of our listener comments.
I didn't either. I decided to go look and see what had come in after we started recording. It's like, oh, look, there's some stuff. Let's see what they have to say. So anyway, that's one of the many things I love doing the show with you.
You know, I love the comments, and I love the fact that we can work together so well that something like that can happen and it doesn't trip either of us up. We can just roll with it.
Right.
I also love the fact that you know me well enough that you decided I probably shouldn't say what I had named the commercial.
I just thought it was funnier just to just leave it.
You're right. It is. I can't wait to hear what people think I named the commercial.
Fair enough. All right. Let's jump to,
we have topics, don't we?
We do have topics. Actually, I don't know that we came up with a third topic. Let's just not tell anybody that though.
No, we totally had enough topics.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good for us. So let's talk about Star Wars.
See, we totally have enough topics.
Listen, we know this isn't Mac related. We don't care.
No, I watched this on my Mac.
It's true. I did. I watched it on my Mac and I saw the headline pass by on my iPad.
See?
Yeah.
Totally fits.
Yeah. Star Wars, the video, this trailer.
The new trailer that's out.
Full length trailer.
Yeah.
It's
pretty exciting. I mean, I love that that we get to see a lot of the new characters. Mm-hmm. I love that we get to see the characters interacting with Han Solo. We see Chewbacca. Mm-hmm. That was cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If I could do a Chewbacca, I would have just done.
Oh, try it for me anyhow.
Oh, no. It's my Chewbacca is embarrassingly bad. Let's put it this way. I draw better than I do a Chewbacca.
Well, I do love your drawing.
All right, we won't go there. So here's the big thing. This is the thing that we were talking about in the pre-show when we just suddenly realized that we should just stop talking about it and talk about it in the show.
Right.
Where is Luke Skywalker?
And I do find it interesting that Luke Skywalker is not in the posters and has only been in the one trailer.
He has only been in the one trailer. Now, he's only been in the one trailer. And to me, spoiler alert, we're going to talk about the trailer. The spoiler for trailer, is that a thing?
It can be, but especially since it's not a spoiler for the movie.
Especially for this particular
I think we're video. Okay, because at this point, the people that are really the serious, hardcore yes. Star Wars fans.
They've done listen to it.
Yeah.
Or they've done watched it. All right. So anyway, spoiler alert. If you don't want to hear us talk about the Star Wars trailer, you should just turn it. I mean, really, you should just turn this off anyway. This is a complete waste of your time. But if you're...
No, we're like... This is really important stuff, Brian.
It's true, it is. So anyway, Star Wars trailer. Luke Skywalker isn't in the Star Wars trailer. And I'm sorry, he is barely in the Star Wars trailer. And he is not, to our knowledge, in the movie poster.
Right.
What do you call this? Is it just a movie poster?
Yeah, it's a movie poster.
God, it seems like the industry would have had a name for that. That name would have...
Well, I've heard them called marquees.
Like a swag palette.
No, that's lame.
Oh, kind of swag palette. Kind of like it.
I think a swag palette is something that happens to a guy after the age of like 60.
All right. We'll save that for another time. He's not on the swag palette. And and the question is why? But there's a bad guy of some sort. We presume he's a bad guy.
Kylo Ren. Well, we know he's a bad guy.
Oh, do tell, because I actually don't know.
Okay, so the bad guy that you see in the poster, his name is Kylo Ren, and that's the guy that has the Sith style red lightsaber with the lightsaber hilt that shoots off the sides.
Ah, right.
Yeah, and he's the prime bad guy, and so what we know right now is that he is not a Sith Lord. But he has been training as a Sith.
And do we know who he's
been training
with
the dark side.
Do we know
of the Force?
Who's training with?
Oh, I'm sorry. He's training. We don't know who he's training with, but he has been training as a Sith.
Okay. All right. So he's on the path of becoming a Sith.
Yeah.
And he's on the poster. Luke Skywalker isn't. Right. And that immediately began setting off speculation as to whether or not that is Luke Skywalker, because he's in a helmet.
Right.
We don't see his face.
Right.
But we know that Mark Hamill's in the film.
Yes. And we know he's playing Luke Skywalker.
And we know that he's playing Luke Skywalker.
Okay. So what I think is that everyone that is saying, OMG, Kylo Ren is actually Luke Skywalker, and he has transformed into the new Darth Vader, but not actually named Darth Vader. I'm calling a big nope on that.
Okay. When you watch the trailer, though, there's a scene where Kylo Ren. See, I know the name now, so I'm going to use it like I knew it.
Good.
Kylo Ren is saying, "I'm going to finish what you started." Parenthetically, father, and he's looking down. He's looking down at the melted mask of Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
And then it cuts to Luke Skywalker, who is undergoing some pain, perhaps like he's being fitted for a helmet.
Now, and I don't know where you're getting that.
Well, I'll tell you where I'm getting that from. I'm getting that from when Anakin was immersed into the Darth Vader suit.
Okay.
And it was painful.
I think that's a very big stretch.
Oh, it's a huge stretch. It's ridiculous.
Because he's sitting on something, a chair, a bench, a rock,
His face. You don't know what he's sitting on. All you see is his face.
No, he's sitting down and... So in the very first teaser trailer where we see Luke Skywalker, he's sitting down. He has what appears to be a Jedi robe on with the hood up. And he sticks his hand out and sets it on R2-D2's dome.
Okay.
And you're hearing the voiceover of Luke telling someone that they have the Force, just like the other people in his family.
Okay, well, that's great. But that's not what you see in this particular trailer. What you see in this particular trailer is a close-up on his face, and he's all like in pain and stuff. He's being tortured or you know... like operated on while he's, you know, in some way that's he's undergoing pain. And it this is a cutaway from right after Kylo Ren says, "I'm going to finish what you started, parenthetically, father."
And just so everyone knows, the parenthetically father part is just Brian. That's not actually in the
Come on, commercial. Man. I want you to watch that and not hear father. How do you not?
I don't hear father.
Well,
what I
you
hear
will
is
now.
Someone that no, I won't. What I hear is someone that feels like he is going to finish what the Emperor and Darth Vader started.
No, he's looking down at that man. No way, dude. All right, so here's the deal. I don't actually think it's Luke. I don't think that Luke and Kylo Ren are the same people.
And neither do I. And I have stuff to back it up that goes beyond just my feelings, my sense in the Force. And the first thing is that we have two different actors. We have Mark Hamill playing Luke Skywalker, and we have the other guy, and I can't remember his name, playing Kylo Ren.
Well, okay, fair enough, but...
And they look very different,
but
including physical structure, meaning the guy that's playing Kylo Ren is a lot thinner than Mark Hamill.
Yeah, and I was going to say that that having another actor play Kylo Ren makes sense from a logistical standpoint because, you know, Mark Hamill is going to be a lot less capable than Luke Skywalker would be even at the same age because of the Force.
Sure. Okay, now here's the other thing. J.J. Abrams has talked a little bit about the characters, and he talks about Kylo Ren and Luke Skywalker as separate characters, and has talked about Luke Skywalker being in future Star Wars films.
Well, okay, the Emperor and Senator Palpatine were different characters.
Played by the same person.
Played by the same person, and you know, the world didn't know, the universe didn't know.
All right, now...
And by the way, if I was J.J. Abrams and I was doing this is exactly how I would do it. That's how I would, you know... I'd want to do, but I still don't think he is either.
I don't think he is either. And I think it's
intentional misdirection is how you put it in the pre-show.
Yeah. I think it's totally intentional misdirection. And I think if he were Luke Skywalker, that would just completely destroy what that character is because
it depends on how they get there.
I,
Depends on how they get there, man. You could have
maybe
a, you could have a fascinating story about how Luke also gets twisted. You could have a fascinating story about that.
Yeah, but I don't see that happening.
Yeah, fair enough, and I don't either.
It would be like like changing Star Wars so Greedo shoots first. It completely ruins Han Solo's character.
Yeah, it could be, man. There's been like so much time, so many things could happen, but that's not my point. My point is, why is he not included in the palette swag? swag palette.
And we don't know. There could be all kinds of reasons. I mean, it may be that the part that Luke Skywalker has in this film is very small.
Yeah,
especially
but
compared
why,
to Han Solo and Princess Leia.
Yeah, but. It could be.
And
it just
okay,
it seems
well, here's
like,
another
it seems
thing.
Like,
why haven't we seen C-3PO in any of these videos yet? We've seen R2-D2.
Is what's his face in it?
Yeah, Anthony Daniels is playing C-3PO. We know he's in the movie. He's billed. And
This is either the most inept marketing campaign ever, or there's a purpose behind it. Can't wait to see it.
Well, here we are discussing this trailer on an Apple show.
Well,
I'm going to go with it's a pretty brilliant marketing campaign.
It's I think that there has been extraordinary care, extraordinary effort and care has been put towards how to roll this out and you know how to do the story.
Yeah. Now, so here's my guess on how this plays out with Luke Skywalker, at least in the storyline. The dark side of the Force is on the rise, and you have these new characters, and they cross paths with Han Solo, and he now has to take them on a journey to find Luke Skywalker because they need the Jedi to help control the dark side of the Force, which is on the rise again. And so Luke Skywalker isn't in most of the movie and doesn't show up until the end.
Hmm. All right. I kind of like that. There certainly is a lot of, it's true. The stories are true that's emphasized in this trailer.
Yes.
Right. Of course, we don't know how much of the film that actually represents, but man, I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to see it. I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to the new James Bond film that debuts in early November.
Oh, that's right. Spectre?
Spectre, yeah. God, I'm looking forward to that. Man, I cannot wait. Now, I haven't gotten tickets yet for Star Wars. They're already on sale, so I'm expecting to be able to see this sometime in March. It's released in December.
Yeah, see, I'm thinking this is like buying a new iPhone, and since we didn't do it within a minute of the launch, that we're months out. I'm hoping at this point, because I still haven't gotten tickets either, is that I'll be able to see it in the theater before Star Wars 8 comes out.
Dude, you were such a luckbox. Someone is going to go, hey, Jeff, got a couple tickets here, man. You want them? It's totally what's going to happen. You're going to be like, you're going to end up seeing it on opening night because some buddy of yours got tickets for you.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
I would be in. Tell you what, if you're buying the tickets for opening night Star Wars, and I'm going along, I'm buying the drinks.
That is very, very, very nice. Very nice of you, sir.
And you know what, Brian? I'm going to extend that beyond you. Listeners, if you're buying me a ticket to go see Star Wars with you, I'm buying the drinks.
That is kind. It's gonna be fun. Can't wait to see this movie, man. It's gonna be good. Very, very excited. I haven't been surprisingly excited. And now that he no longer has control over his franchise, I feel really bad about all the horrible things I've thought about George Lucas's handling of his own franchise.
I don't feel bad about the way I feel about the way George Lucas has handled his franchise. The best thing that ever happened to Star Wars was George Lucas. The worst thing that ever happened to Star Wars was George Lucas.
Yeah, it is true. And it is true. All right, well, let's
And that's on. This week's Apple Context Machine.
Let's talk about some Apple stuff, too.
All right. I guess we can.
So maybe we'll talk about, like, dark and depressing Sissa.
Oh yeah. Well, the bright point in the whole CISA thing is that Apple is giving it a big nope.
Right. So CISA is like the Computer Information Sharing Act, I think is what it stands for. Cybersecurity information.
Which doesn't sound ominous at all.
Yeah, and it really what it is, it's a surveillance bill. It's a surveillance bill that specifically it bribes tech companies into becoming informants by granting them immunity for essentially anything they do related to sharing information with the government.
Yeah, and see, this just sounds horrible, horrible to me.
It is horrible. It is the wrong thing. So the idea here is to enable and empower companies to let law enforcement, both at the federal level, at the intelligence level, and at the local level, for them to be able to alert law enforcement about cybersecurity threats. Which, you can almost say, yeah, I can see that.
Yes. But when you actually start really looking at it, it suddenly doesn't
sound. Yeah, it stands up so to good. about a good 20 or 30 seconds of contemplation at the most. And because, for one thing, they're asking essentially tech companies to become snoops and I hate the word snitch because I don't like what snitch implies. I don't like the idea that someone should keep quiet about wrongdoing. I've never been keen on that.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But it makes them snoops and snitches. We'll just go ahead and use that term just because. And then turns around and gives them this sort of blanket immunity for doing so, which basically means that there's no oversight. There are no repercussions. There's no tests. There's no checks and balances. And all this can be done without a warrant.
That's a huge problem.
It's a huge problem.
Fracking problem.
Thank you. It's a huge problem.
It is. And the feel that I get from this bill, it's like that, you know, in the cartoons, in old cartoons, you have the guy that tries to get the hero in the cartoon to do the thing that's bad and is wrong and is sitting on his shoulder like a little devil. And he's like, come on, you can do it. Everyone's doing it. It's not like you're going to get in trouble. And that's kind of how this feels to me. And the government is that little devil sitting on the tech company's shoulder. And they're saying, you're not going to get in trouble. I mean, look, we've got it in writing. You're not going to get in trouble. So it's okay. And it just feels like a bad justification for doing something that's really, really wrong.
Agreed. And then there's the implementation side. And the implementation side, it was probably deliberately crafted in such a way that essentially any information can be shared, not just information related to actual cybersecurity threats.
Of course it was intentionally.
And then that information can be relayed to other agencies for things that have nothing to do with quote unquote cybersecurity. So it becomes a surveillance bill.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally a surveillance bill. And just the acronym, when you read what the words are for the acronym, it just is really scary.
Yeah, it is scary. The White House supports it. So disappointing. The Obama administration has been so disappointing in the realm of our digital rights.
Which I find so surprising. This is not the stance that I expected Mm-mm. the Obama administration to take. Mm-mm.
And, you know, and the Republicans are equally disappointing because they always talk about, the government being intrusive and meddling in our lives and all this stuff. But they're always keen as can be to give the government blanket authority to snoop. And it's a really weird disconnect. So we have both sides of the U.S. aisle essentially supporting this. There are at least some, there are certainly some Republicans, and there were some Democrats who do not support it. But there's way too much. So the Washington Post story about Apple coming out against it, which is, by the way, is what we're supposed to be talking about, said that there are currently 70 votes in the Senate. That's enough to overcome any kind of filibuster. And the House has passed similar bills any number of times. You know, they're, for whatever reason, keen as can be on the surveillance state. And, I mean, it's really, really scary. And here's the really interesting thing is that several, but not all, and not anywhere near enough, of the very tech companies that would be protected by this bill have come out against it.
Yeah, that's pretty telling right there. I mean, this is their blanket protection, and they're saying, no, don't do this.
Yes, they're saying, no, don't do this. So that includes Yelp. Let me actually get...
Apple,
Twitter, I think.
Isn't Google on board with this?
No, but the BSA, which is the Business Software Association, of which Google is a member, has. So it's a trade group. But that Google has not, at least as of yesterday, I didn't look to see if they said anything today, Google has not specifically said anything about it. Here we go. I just found that article. Again, you know, it's a good thing we do our research.
Well, top man.
We have, let's see here, we have Reddit has come out against it, which is, I guess, you know, really they are a technology company at this point. They're a communications mm-hmm. platform. Dropbox has come out against it, Salesforce, Yelp, Twitter, and Apple. And then the Computer and Communications Industry Association, the CCIA, not to be mistaken for the CIA, and the right. Business Software Association, the BSA.
Not to be confused with Boy Scouts of America.
That is correct, too. They have opposed it. And Apple's statement is, quote, "We don't support the current CISA proposal. The trust of our customers means everything to us, and we don't believe security should come at the expense of their privacy." Hear, hear.
Yeah, this is exactly what Apple needs to be saying.
Yes.
And it's what the other every other tech company should be saying as well.
And it's consistent with Apple's message on this. Apple has again and again and again spoke up about the importance of privacy and the importance of end-user encryption and peer-to-peer encryption. User-to-user encryption. And that's not only from encryption and protection from the corporate world, i.e., the tech companies themselves, but from the government and from everybody else. If we want to have our information be private, it must be private from everyone, or it's private from no one.
Exactly. And unfortunately, our current government seems to think that it is possible to selectively have our information private.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't like the idea of any government agency being able to get at my personal data on a whim, essentially.
Yeah.
Without needing a warrant.
It's the warrantless aspect is always scary as can be. There was a lot of warrantless stuff going on with the Patriot Act. And it was a huge threat to our democracy. I philosophically abhor the attitude that if you have done nothing wrong, you have nothing to be worried about.
That is a really, really bad life philosophy.
In my opinion, it is too. I understand that a lot of people disagree with that. And a lot of people, you know, have genuine feelings along those lines. But to me, it's philosophically abhorrent. And part of that is that whatever starts off for the right reasons, for instance, the surveillance state, when it starts off looking for the right things for the right reasons, it always gets twisted with enough time.
Of course. That's just how it works. And we have seen it time and again historically.
Always.
Yep. And why should we expect this to be any different? Discounting the fact that once you take away that that I'll call it an enclave for our privacy, our data is no longer private, period.
Mm-hmm.
Bad guys and good guys alike, everyone has access to it.
I'm less concerned with protecting my data from the good guys, except out of principle, and infinitely concerned about the reality is that I cannot, that the good guys cannot have access to my data without the bad guys being able to get access to my data.
Right.
That's the principle here that, that matters the most.
And the bad guys will get at it.
They will get at it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's that. Yeah. That's all there is to it. Well, that makes me feel a warm inside.
Golly, gosh darn. I feel great now.
Oh, good.
Now, I know that we had another topic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know what it was.
You were interested in talking some about Google and
Google Knows?
What they know about searching.
Uh-huh. The Google Knows story. Yes. I am pleased as punch to talk about that. Let me actually find the story. So Google released a blog post. That was like 11 things. Let me actually get the title here. As it comes
Google Knows. You search for baby pictures more than anything else.
That was my title.
I know. I really liked it. That's why I just shared it on the show.
Thank you. Their title to their blog post was 11 Things to Know About Google Photos. And it was actually really interesting stuff. So like the apparently the number one search subject, let me actually get their wording there. Babies are the top photo subject you search for. Now, I think, by the way, that's not random babies.
I'm assuming it's very specific babies.
Yeah, like either, you know, from both a celebrity standpoint. So Google Photos is Google's photo sharing and streaming service with some editing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've never used it. So, you know.
Yeah, it's like their version of iPhoto online.
Right, with the emphasis on sharing and an emphasis on Google actually slurping up all that information about you and then selling it. Just, you know, in case I haven't made that point in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because it's not something that had ever occurred to me.
Yeah, excellent. So their number 7 point was you really aren't sick of baby photos. Babies are the top photo subject you search for. Now, a lot of, I think it's easy to just like, sit back and people, you know, think, you know, and envision people secretly searching for baby photos so that they can, you know, coo and go, oh, that's so cute. I don't think it's the case. I think it's more like you're looking for your friend's babies.
Your friend's babies, or you're looking for photos of your own baby in specific situations.
Yeah, and it's the people in your circles, and it's your own photos.
Right.
And so that's what
it's not strangers looking for babies.
Yeah. I don't think
it's friends and family looking for babies.
Yeah. Google didn't specify, mind you. Google knows, but Google didn't specify to us, but I don't think it's strangers. So they also see skies, beaches, and mountains were all in the top 10 of things that we take photos of. They didn't specify where it ranked, but me is apparently a top, not the top, search.
So people are searching for Brian Chaffin.
No.
Interesting.
No, people are searching for me. And here's the interesting thing about that. This is something that to me, I mean, like clearly people don't care. But here's the fascinating thing. Google knows when you're logged into Google and you search for me, which is such a narcissistic thing to do. People are just so self-absorbed. But when you search for me, like if I was doing that, they would know that that's Brian Chaffin. So go find pictures of Brian Chaffin in Google Photos. And then they could actually do so. All because you typed in me. That just fills me with foreboding. Is that that's a good word.
I like foreboding. That sounds good.
Okay, am I so making too much of that?
I don't know yet. And I say I don't know yet because what I just did, and I'm logged in to my Google account right now, I just did a Google search for me.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm finding, so far there's nothing, there's no photos of me, but what I am seeing is that I should probably turn on safe search. Just saying.
It's a good thing this isn't a video podcast.
It's a really good thing this isn't a video podcast.
Or a screencast.
Yeah. Or, you know, there could be some people that would be like, hey, I really like the show a lot more now. I don't know.
Yeah, they could. But I don't know. It's just, me.
So,
people I want to have my photos, by the way, are Google.
Yeah, but have you done a Google search for yourself and then looked at all the photos that show up?
For me or for Brian?
I'm going to look up you right now.
Yeah.
And hey, I did a search for Brian Chaffin. Yeah. The top hit is you on Mac Observer.
Oh, sweet.
And when I look at images, wow, first image I see is me, you, and
Chuck Joyner.
Chuck Joyner.
Yep, that's mm-hmm. the same picture, the same for me. Lots of lots of photographs of me, and then a picture of Corey Tamas, because I posted it, I guess.
Yes, yeah. When I have done image searches on my name, I see a lot of photos of me, and then graphics that I have created.
the picture where I look like the I'm either the homeless guy in Berkeley going through your trash, or I'm a Berkeley professor. It's one of the two, and it could be either. That shows up, so that's good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Also, the graphic, and it's you and Chuck and me again, and I'm assuming you put the speech bubbles in?
Yes. I don't see that one, but yes, I did that.
I do see it. I'm saying, dude, what? And you're like, come on, Jeff, what were you thinking? And Chuck's in the middle. Jeez, I got to get a better agent. That's funny stuff right
there.
By
the way, none of these pictures are worth looking at. I don't advise doing this at home.
No, there's a great photo of you from your blog, Geek Tales,
yeah,
where you're singing into a microphone. So this would be at Cirque du Mac.
That's a picture that Caroline took, I think.
Oh, yeah. Caroline's such an awesome photoist. Photoist,
yeah. Photoist. A photoist, right. So anyway, Google. Google knows. Google knows. Google knows who you are.
They do.
Google knows what you search for.
I never answered your question.
What?
Which was, do I think you're making too much out of this?
Yes.
And if you are searching in your photos area and you type me in Google Photos, it totally makes sense that it would find images that you are part of. Now, when I did a search for me just at google.com,
mm-hmm.
while logged in as me,
mm-hmm.
if all it had brought up were photos of me, that would have felt kind of creepy. But instead, it brought up all these graphics related to the term me.
Oh, that's interesting.
And a lot of stuff that was very, very adult-oriented.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, other little things that Google knows. There's 100 million users, which actually seems kind of light for a Google product, but whatever. Food is what we photograph the most after people. So it's people first, food second. And I genuinely love this title. You're all foodies, or at least you want people to think you are.
That's awesome.
Love, love, love that. So events include weddings, concerts, Christmas, dancing, birthday, and clubs. Those are the events that we photograph. Dogs, the most popular animal that we take photographs of. Mm-hmm. Take more photographs of dogs than cats, so take that, cats.
I'll let Nightshade know. She's going to be very pleased.
I actually had trouble parsing that. So you drove cars to the number two spot in the list of things photographed. Google knows.
You drove cars to the number two photographed spot?
You drove cars to the number two spot in the list of things photographed.
And what was that?
I don't know. They didn't really
say. Oh, they didn't say.
Say.
Oh, so they're being coy.
Maybe. Either that or I'm missing some information.
So we drove
somewhere
to the beach and then took photographs.
Right. Exactly.
Huh. Okay.
They claim that people uploading photographs to Google Photo, i.e. to Google's portfolio for you to, so that they can sell that information, that by doing that, they have freed up 3,720 terabytes on our devices.
Now, that's not fair to say, because they're implying that every single photo that's been uploaded to their service has been deleted from our devices.
Yeah, that's what... So you need some space, and then an infographic that says, we freed up 3,720 terabytes of storage. That's like filling up a 16 gig phone with photos every day for 637 years.
Okay.
Great way to actually, you know, get a handle on just how much data they're talking about. And then the caption underneath that says you can safely delete backed up photos and videos from your device and still access them using Google Photos. Never run out of space on your phone again. We've freed up, but they do specifically say we've freed up those terabytes of storage.
Yeah, I think they're being misleading with that statement.
Maybe, but they could actually be, that actually could also be true.
How do they know that people are actually deleting those images off their devices?
Because Google knows. It's kind of my whole point behind that entire...
It's really kind of creepy.
That umbrella phrase, Google knows.
Yeah, I know. Google knows so much. Between Google and Amazon, I'm actually kind of annoyed now that I think about it that I don't have stuff showing up at my door that I haven't ordered, but I need and just didn't realize it yet.
Yeah, I'm sure that Amazon's working on that. Actually, I think I remember reading a story about Amazon working on that.
I'm sure they are
working on that. They certainly work on it from the standpoint of stocking the warehouses. Some of the stocking in an Amazon warehouse is based upon what they expect you to order,
which makes sense.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense from both a commercial and, you know, we're trying to make a profit standpoint, but also from a logistical standpoint. It makes a lot of sense, but Google knows, man.
All right, Google knows.
Nonetheless, it was interesting. It's an interesting blog post from them. I like it when Google throws us this occasional bone by actually sharing with us some of what it knows.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And so my takeaway now is that we go to the mountains and we go to the beach to take pictures of our babies so we can look at them over and over again.
Yeah. I just got a text from a friend who linked to my iTunes 12.3.1 story,
mm-hmm.
With the caption, bags of puppies, cool.
I'll make sure there's a link to that article in the show notes because everyone needs to see your iTunes update piece. It is classic.
It's important. It's important. All right. Well, we are conveniently out of time.
That's lucky because I think we're out of stuff to talk about for the week.
No, well, you know, we could.
We are out of relevant stuff to talk about.
Right. That's it.
Yeah. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Twitter. I'm Jay Gamet.
And I'm TM O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at The Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. Thanks, Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at The Mac Observer. Assuming you don't see us first.